This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is Frida Liu. It's also A La Carte Tuesday. Now, climbing up the ranks of the restaurant business, Marcus Lau started the kitchen table in 2014 with a business partner and making his first mark on the F&B scene. When the partnership ended, he founded Table and Apron, catering experiences for customers looking for both casual and private dining. 3 years after last speaking to us, Marcus returns to share about what he learned from the previous experience and what it's like to run his own show. So welcome back. You've been featured on this and also with Feeding Time with Fei Koo and all that. So, what's changed, so far?
Hi, Frida. Thank you so much for having me back here again. It's pretty familiar, so I'm quite excited about that. Table and Apron has changed almost quite everything, actually, with how we're doing things. The most important thing we realized was that as a restaurant, there are two kinds of restaurant in the market right now. And the first one is the new trendy restaurant that's out there. And that's going to happen every day. You know, whether it's next month or next year, you're going to see a thousand other restaurants coming up. And then there's the second category of restaurants where they're almost like restaurant institutions, restaurants that you want to go back to all the time. So as we changed our name to Table and Apron, it was a catalyst for a new direction, direction of understanding where we were heading to as a restaurant and digging our roots deeper in knowing what that meant to us. So at Table and Apron, what we do differently now is we put a lot of focus on not just the food and the service, but how we make people feel. And that started off for us with my team. I'm grateful because the team that was with me before when we were the kitchen table to who we are right now, Table and Apron, is the same team. And I put a lot of focus on saying that we've got to invest in the team, making sure that they are there to grow, making sure that they know how to have conversations with each other. And, you know, the saying goes, happy team, happy food, happy guests. So really, quite a lot of things has changed. But more importantly, the biggest changeover with Table and Apron is that we now have a regular dining room downstairs. And in addition to that, we have a private dining room that just allows us to do We have on this coming Sunday, we have a buffet that's happening upstairs, and then we have a degustation menu that's happening at night. So really, it's quite a number of events.
Okay, so there's a transition from kitchen table to now the Table and Apron. So let's talk about the external side of things. Was there a change in decor? Was there a change in the look and feel? And that's the external side.
Absolutely. We changed our brand. We uplifted very subtle things for now. For instance, we started setting the table. When we were the kitchen table, a lot of our guests perceived us as a cafe, which is really true. And we just had to change the mindset and how we did things. So what we've done is setting the table properly. We retrained the team. We put a lot of emphasis on having real, authentic, genuine conversations with our guests. And that has changed how they perceived us. More importantly, with our food, what we've done is we have introduced weekly specials. And I think looking forward in the next few months, we're looking at really changing the facade. So we changed our name back in October last year. And we've been, 5 months running right now. And that has been a really remarkable run that I'm quite happy about.
Okay, so you call them guests. You don't call them customers.
Absolutely. Every time you look at the hospitality business, and this is something that I'm grateful to be in, and I know that that is a commitment and duty on my end, that when we are in this business, we treat our customers not from a transactional standpoint, but we treat them from a relationship standpoint of what they mean to us. That also applies to my team. And if we can get that right, then, you know, it gives people more reason to, why would you go back to a restaurant? I mean, you just have to ask yourself, why do you go back to the same restaurant? I ask myself that every time when I go out to eat, why do I go back to the same restaurants? And really, it's how they make you feel. So when you tweak how you describe your guests, it adds so much more color to them than just a number.
Right. It's like, you know, I guess like someone coming to your house, right? How would you treat them? Now, so just take us a little bit back a little bit. You started, you got in the F&B industry when you were studying in Canada as an engineer. So, you know, tell me that story.
Oh, that was that was a very interesting run in how I got into the business. I've always loved cooking when I was young. And in fact, when I was in college, I started selling nasi lemak to really add an additional income into what I was doing. But, you know, like any young person going out to work and finding out what you wanted to do, for me, because my father was running an engineering firm, so it was very natural for me to just say, I'm just going to do engineering. So I chose to go to Canada, which allowed you to do a co-op program, which allows you to just go out and work. And it was there where I realized, after working in, you know, huge manufacturing companies, that it wasn't so much what I wanted to do. So one day I was eating at a restaurant, and I loved it so much, and a friend of mine knew that I really loved the restaurants, and asked, why didn't you try working one? Mm. So at the end of the meal, I just asked, can I have a job there? And I have no experience. I went in with saying that I probably can only help you wash dishes. And that was how I started. So
okay, washing dishes and then finally getting to the kitchen. So you're not formally trained in that sense?
Absolutely not.
Oh, no. Okay. And so how did your father take this from you giving up engineering?
My parents are, I'm very fortunate for them. They have been very open with what I was doing. So I would imagine them being absolutely confused at that point in time. But they knew the inkling, the passion that was in there. But they never knew that I would take it that far. So I said, it's just for 4 months. Let's just try it out and see how it goes. But those 4 months turned into opportunities where doors were just open. So I managed to get an apprenticeship under the same chef, and it was a really small restaurant, and I learned as much as I could. And without my chef mentor over there, I don't think I would have gotten this far. So.
So now, okay, back to the restaurant. Has the menu changed because of a new direction and all that?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. We have kept our signatures, our buckwheat fried chicken, our sourdough breads. But what we've done is we added an element of embracing change, which is weekly specials. And that's something where a lot of my team is now highly tuned to what is seasonal, what is on offer. There is a bit more spontaneity involved. And we go to the markets, we see what's fresh. We have conversations about it. And we push out new dishes that just come on a weekly basis. And for our private dining room, we now offer a variety of things whereas before, we thought we could only do one thing in our dining, our private dining room upstairs. But now we do buffets, we do family-style table-sharing food, which is similar to downstairs. But we also do a degustation menu, which goes back to the roots of what I used to do, which was a supper club. So course by course. And everything is still very much inspired and sourced by what is around us. And that's something that...
How long were you doing the supper club before you started the kitchen table?
We started the supper club with my ex-business partner for 1 year before we started the kitchen table. And it's been 3 years running now as a restaurant in Damansara Kim.
If you look at, so you're just closed on Mondays like most restaurants, so it's lunch and dinner.
Lunch and dinner, that's
correct. And the kind of people that turn out?
We get predominantly a lot of women across the board. We find that our food, perhaps it's because it's very flavor-driven, it's very clean. We focus a lot on vegetables as well. One of our signatures is actually our charred eggplant dish where we rub the eggplants with miso butter. Mm-hmm. We char it. We add some bonito flakes on top, and then we have a green onion puree at the bottom. So, you know, it has very, very deep umami flavors that goes into it. And to say that you're using that, which is just a vegetable as the start of the dish, says a lot about what we're trying to do as well. So that really appeases to a lot of our guests. But I think what's more important is the kind of conversations we have with them. We get regulars that come back, but we also know it's because of the work that, you know, we're putting in that. So, yeah, that's...
So you're still very much in the kitchen?
I am all over the place. Not as much in the kitchen anymore. I do spend time in the kitchen quite significantly, but I spend a lot of time working with my team. That's something that I'm very thankful for, and I don't take it for granted because my team consists of both local and foreign talent, and they all come from a very diverse background. Some of my core team management people, they don't have any experience in the industry before this. So like me, they had no formal culinary training, no formal hospitality background. So that's something that we're very thankful for. And engaging the team is really, you know, it takes up 80% of my time.
Yeah, and how do you get them to join? How do you get them to stay? Because that's the toughest challenge in the F&B industry.
I ask myself that every day.
You get down on your knees and you thank God.
Well, partly so, but the thing that I've done differently, and I think where I'm very fortunate, is that I've come in as a dishwasher when I started working in the industry. And I worked my way up to being a cook. I worked my way up to being a receptionist. And I could really see what it took to ensure that the guests had a memorable experience. And I realized that hospitality is a team sport. And it was very important that I saw it from that perspective. So having that sense of empathy towards the team and understanding where they're trying to head to was important in how we did things differently. So the things that we do, and I know for a fact that we practice and proudly want to practice every day, is we have family meals between 5 to 6 p.m. and everyone actually sits down. The entire team sits down together. That's a daily ritual that we do. My full-timers are all on 5-day work weeks. It's something that is not commonly practiced in this industry, but no one wrote that rule, so I changed it to a 5-day work week. And that's something that I still want to invest in, and saying, how do we make this career a viable career, a career that people can say that this industry is worth being in? And
I still have a life.
I still have a life, absolutely. And I can be proud of the fact that what I'm doing is actually a craft. And that you know, having a bigger picture, communicating or that to the team is important for me. So,
and of course, you know, your experience and lessons learned from doing a business with a partner and as a sole proprietor. We'll discuss that in just a moment. Max Lau from Table and Apron. You're listening to A La Carte Tuesday and Enterprise. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Boyish 40-something millionaires. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to A La Carte Tuesday and Enterprise. Marcus Lau from Table and Apron here with me, Frida Liu. And Table and Apron was formerly called The Kitchen Table. There was a name change, end of last year, right? You know, when people turn up at your restaurant as well, what's the kind of pricing that you put there?
The average check at our restaurant is about 40 ringgit to 60 ringgit. If people come on the weekdays, we have a really, really great value of a set lunch. And that's priced between about 17 to 22. So the average check really depends. If you come on a weekday for the set lunch, it's about 30 ringgit. But then if you come for dinner, or lunch, dinner or weekends, then it's about 50, 60 ringgit.
Okay, and you find that that's the sweet spot in terms of pricing?
I think so. It depends on what our guests are also looking for. When we have our private room functions, that's a completely different pricing as well.
Yeah.
But that really depends on the occasion. So we've been asked to host a book launch. We've had a calligraphy session in a private room before. We have anniversary, birthdays, corporate team building. So we've had to cater to a variety for those, and that gives us the flexibility for our private dining room. But for our ground floor restaurant, our everyday dining, that's about 40-60 ringgit.
Okay, and you know, has the economy had an effect on your industry, on your restaurant?
That's a really good question. But I'm thankful it's not had an effect on us. It has a really good effect. It was a very positive effect, actually. But I understand that with how the economy is doing, it's going to be very challenging for a lot of restaurants, in the sense that your guest is going to have, you know, a limited amount of money, and they're going to have to choose restaurants that gives them more reason of why they should go over there too. Whether it gives them more value for their experience. And that's something that we're thankful for, because we ask ourselves, again, going back to the bigger picture, is how do we make them feel at the end of the meal? When they walk out the door, does the conversation go towards wanting to return again? Does the conversation go towards a dining experience that you do not want to repeat? That's something that we take into account, and we're fortunate that a lot of our regulars are coming back for that.
Just a story about the partnership as well. Now, what were some of the lessons learned from that? And I guess it's a case of just moving in different directions?
Absolutely. Partnerships, like marriages, all depend on compatibility. And when we first started as the supper club, it was something that was a great lesson for us. And as we grew, I think it was a really good run. But as approached the second year of our business as the kitchen table, that was when we realized that we weren't as compatible anymore. So that was an opportunity for me to take over the business, and the entire rebranding to Table and Apron was a catalyst for the new direction.
Mm. And what would you have done differently?
I don't think I would have done anything differently, really. Mm. I always look at how you grow into the industry as an experience, and you wouldn't have learned how to do it another way if you didn't go through this path. So for me, I wouldn't have asked myself what I would have done differently from before, but I would always ask myself, how would I do it differently moving forward?
Okay.
So going back to what I mentioned before, it's really putting the team first, acknowledging that hospitality, if provided to the team, that same kind of message gets followed through down to our guests as well.
Mm. What are the challenges doing this business alone?
That, I think a lot. Yeah. First of all, because I am the only person sort of managing and making the decisions on that end, it is a real struggle on a day-to-day basis to see how things are done, to make decisions, big decisions on how to move the team, the company forward, how to move the restaurant forward in terms of what we do with our food as well. But I'm grateful because at the same time, the same team that was with me before the kitchen table to who they are with me now at Table and Apron have naturally grown alongside me as well. So a lot of the tasks, a lot of the decision-making has also been given to them, delegated, so that they are empowered to make those decisions with the bigger picture of hospitality in mind. And that I'm quite grateful for.
Give me an example of that. When you say you've empowered them, what would the staff do because they are empowered?
We go back to very simple things. Let's go down all the way to what a team member, who is what we call a waiter at our restaurant also, what they would do if a guest has a dining experience at Table and Apron and, you know, they come for fried chicken and then they ask, we don't take, dark meat, like legs and thighs. Do you have breast meat? And can you accommodate that in the future? That's something we can absolutely do, provided they give us that advance notice. Mm. Or if it's a case where they're not happy with a dish and they haven't even had it or they ate just a bit of it. For us, it's very simple in the sense that if your guest is not happy with a particular aspect of the dining experience, go forth and do something that's going to change and end that on a good story.
And they can freely do that without having to check with anyone in that sense.
Absolutely.
Okay. So, and you say you're everywhere, right? I mean, you're doing, there's also the marketing side, you know, you're also the face behind it, and there's also running the restaurant, right? In terms of growing your business, where do you think you need assistance, further assistance? Is it the marketing side?
On that end, I would say it's more on... Yeah, I would say it's on the marketing side. But I realize that as important as the marketing is, it's getting back to the same message of what are we doing to make our guests come back for more? How do we tap into new markets is what we're doing. And I've been very fortunate because even our regulars have been a strong part of our culture. Our regulars have assisted and brought us forward as a restaurant as well. And... you know, having that relationship that goes beyond just the team, but listening to your guests and knowing that they can provide input and value that you wouldn't have known if you didn't turn that stone over, that's something that I've been working towards too. So I'm very fortunate that our team goes beyond just the people who work for me, but also the people who are working with me. And some of them are really strong regulars with us.
And how do you plan to go about getting new customers? Well, move beyond the women.
The one thing we're actually doing is tapping into new markets is really casting the net out beyond just social media, which I think is a common thing that we would generally do. And one thing that we do is we go through directly to large groups, whether it's expat groups, whether it's companies, and we offer them something that they wouldn't have known about before. And that gives them value, gives them option to think about what they want to do. And we constantly get emails for that. So that really opens up a lot of market for us, especially with our private dining.
Okay. You also had a pointed pen calligraphy workshop, right? Is this sort of the kind of things that you do?
We don't host it. We don't do it.
So this is the private dining area.
This is the private dining area. Because of its versatility, it allows us to really change how We set up the dining space upstairs, and it gives the team a really strong muscle to learn how to create bespoke environments for that to happen. The calligraphy workshop that you just pointed out is actually hosted by KL Ligraphy, and they come in and they host a workshop, and all we do is provide the setting, the space, mm-hmm. and the finger food. So
okay, so and so when you did the rebranding as well, was there confusion? I mean, were there questions? You know, I mean, how did you address this sort of thing?
That's a really good question, because when we made the change, initially we thought that it would be a huge jump. It would confuse a lot of our guests. But we were very surprised. And we learned that from our regular guests, a lot of our frequent guests that would come back all the time. To them, the name change was a reason for them to see that, okay, we've rebranded, we've, you know, had a catalyst in a new direction, but it didn't change how they perceived us as a restaurant. Mm. And that was the most important thing for us to get through with that. So a lot of our frequent guests still came back and still are with us. And I think that the new brand was good, because it gave people reason to go, hey, what was this place before? So actually, yeah. We attracted a lot of guests to come to our restaurant.
Okay, so you were saying that the second floor not open before?
No, it was. We opened it only recently in November, right, where we marketed it out, and that has been a huge response with what we're getting. So the challenge is being able to do a private dining and a regular dining on busy services on the weekends.
So how do you handle that?
That's where we have to group up as a team and really learn how to expand and create menus that allows us to host both functions at the same time.
Do you have a lot of additional part-timers as well working with you?
Yes, we do. We're constantly on the lookout for more people, definitely. We're really on a path of growth right now where we're looking for like-minded people, and we get a lot of people who through very similar backgrounds like myself, who have not worked in the industry and said that they wanted to get their hands, you know, their feet wet in the industry, and we give them the same opportunities as well. As long as they have the same right fit, and more importantly, the passion and drive for it, that's something that, you know, for me, it's my duty to provide that if I've been provided the same option.
Okay. And I was, of course, you know, we tried your food this morning. You brought something for us for breakfast. What was that you brought for us?
We brought seaweed butter. Uh-huh. We brought chicken liver pate and smoked mackerel pate, which was from the restaurant as well. And some freshly baked sourdough.
These are the hot favorites.
I would say the smoked mackerel is, but you guys are special. So we brought the chicken liver pate and seaweed butter that's actually not on the menu.
That's my special request, and if you know the right people. Now, so you talk about, you've got this whole idea now with Table and Apron. Where do you see it moving forward? That is your baby.
I've pondered about the direction of where we want to take the business, and A lot of restaurants in their second or third year have gone on to expand a different location. Mm. We get asked that many times.
Yeah, sure.
Do you want to open a different place? Do you want to go out into, you know, another town to expand? Do you want to open the same Table and Apron again? But when I really ask myself deep down about why people come back to our restaurant, we figure that we actually want to be a restaurant institution. Mm. We want to be your top 10 restaurants that you go to. Mm. And that is, for us, very ambitious. Mm. But we think it's reachable. Mm. Simply because we're not benchmarking against any third-party reviewers. But we're always benchmarking against our guests. Mm. Why do they come back? And we ask them, what's your favorite restaurant? And that's something that you can ask anyone here.
Right.
What is the favorite restaurant you go to? Mm. And when we ask that question, we ask ourselves, how do we make sure we become part of that top 10 list?
And I think so in terms of success is when they come back again and
absolutely
again. All right. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for breakfast.
Welcome.
Marcus Lau from Table and Apron. You've been listening to A La Carte Tuesday on Enterprise. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.